And we are live. So this is going to be our second installment of our contemporary issues series that we're doing here at Aguda Shalom. The first session that I recognize some faces from, the first session that we did was addressing COVID-19. And from, you know, if I'm being honest with myself, and chances are this is what many of you are thinking as well, you know, it's nice to hear contemporary issues on COVID-19, but there are other things in life other than COVID-19. And even if for some people that dominates their life, maybe it's a good thing to start thinking about different kinds of topics, kind of as a healthy escape in a certain way. So we're going to go back from COVID-19 to just general contemporary issues. And what we're going to do tonight is we're going to... Oh, let me just mute everyone. Okay, mute all. Okay. So I'm just going to mute everyone now. And if you have a question, put it in the chat and I will unmute you. All right. Thumbs up. That sounds good. Okay, good. We got that. Great. Okay. So the topic we're going to be doing tonight is talking about intellectual property and intangible property in halakha. So let me share the source sheet with you guys. So here's a few questions that I'm going to throw out. Actually, I am going to temporarily unmute everyone because I want to let you jump in. So let's unmute you all. You all have the ability to unmute now. Let me raise just a few questions before we get into the meat and potatoes of the shiur. So let's say you are, you live like I do in an apartment complex in the manor, and your Wi-Fi, just your internet goes out in the middle of the day. You're waiting for Optimum to come over and fix it. But you have to get on a Zoom session. You have to get on a meeting. And you're thinking frantically, oh, my gosh, I have limited data on my phone. I don't have internet. This is an important meeting. I need to make a pitch, whatever it might be. What do I do? So you start searching. And lo and behold, your neighbor from upstairs, their Wi-Fi is on and it's unlocked, which is uncommon, by the way. But let's just say for argument's sake, it's unlocked. You can access it, but you know your friend is on vacation right now and you can't get through to them. So would you be allowed to use your friend's Wi-Fi without their consent? The same way, let's just take another case. Can I use their book without their consent? Can I use someone's car without their consent? Should there be a difference between using something like Wi-Fi without consent, or should it be the same as taking anyone else's property without consent? Just to give you an idea, in the yeshiva world, people tend to think when you go around the base measures, you go around the study hall, any book on the table, even if it belongs to someone, you're allowed to use it because presumably everyone's fine with everyone else using their books. I happen to actually not like that because someone borrows a book and they never return it. So I write inside my svarim, Usur Beli Rishus, cannot be used without permission. I'm more than happy to share. I just need to know where the book goes. So, however, the Mishnah Brura actually says that you're not allowed to take someone's book without their permission because there might be maybe some wear and tear on it. Also, people just don't give permission, presumably, for you to use their property. So the question is, and I leave this to you, can I use someone's Wi-Fi without their consent? What do we think?
No.
I think no.
Okay, so let's do one at a time. Does anyone want to explain why they say, let's take someone who says no. Anyone want to volunteer?
Well, I actually have this problem on almost a daily basis.
Really?
Even though it appears that my thing is locked, somebody manages to get in, especially early in the morning, and I have to go turn off the Wi-Fi, knock them off, and then go back on to be able to go
on. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
That's you murder.
May think, so my point being that someone may think that they're not annoying somebody else or something, but they may be really inconveniencing them.
Wow.
You know, like let's say you think your friend is on vacation, but maybe the mother-in-law is there taking care of the baby, or, you know, something, you know, yeah. you don't know.
It might be like, it might be me and Marissa when we go on a walk and we like going through that path near your house, we quickly jump on the Wi-Fi when we go by.
Oh, that explains it. Get knocked off my Wi-Fi, but I don't think it's because of that. I think sometimes the systems get overloaded. But and I have no ability, since I'm in a building, to turn off mine individually. But
So does anyone want to make an argument why Wi-Fi might be different than using someone's other property without permission? What might be unique about Wi-Fi?
It's not going to degrade.
Ah, okay, good. Was that Susan?
Yeah.
Okay, so Susan makes a really good point. You see, before I mentioned that the Mishnah Berurah says when you use someone's book without permission, one of the considerations is that there's wear and tear. But as far as Wi-Fi is concerned, is there wear and tear? Now, here's the thing. This is why I said in my scenario that your neighbor is away. Because in theory, let's say Toby's case, she's in her house. She's using Wi-Fi to jump into all the shirim and Agudah Shalom and run the shul and all the different meetings that are taking place. She needs that Wi-Fi in place. And then Marissa and I are on our walk, and we log on to the Wi-Fi, and then it slows down her internet. So it's not an innocuous action. In fact, when I log on to someone's Wi-Fi, it slows down the internet for anyone else who is logged into it. So that's why I'm going to specify, what if I use Wi-Fi in Toby's house when she's on vacation in the Five Towns, Long Island, wherever it might be? Five Towns is not exactly a vacation place. So we'll think it's
sure it is. Or it's yes. Good. It's all good. All good.
All right. So anyone want to think of why it might be prohibited? Let's keep that, let's keep it in mind. Let me quickly raise a few more questions. Another one is pirating. So pirating, if you're not familiar, it doesn't mean just a bunch of men with rum on a boat to go and steal other people's boats in the middle of the sea.
It's not Ian's the expert on that.
What was that?
Ian's the expert on that.
Oh, okay.
I'm so, pirates.
Ah, so you'll have to tell us if you know about this kind of pirating. So pirating is, let's say I drop a new album. Right? I have a new rock album that comes out. I sign a deal with a record company or whatever it's called, and I get a copyright. So what happens is that I now upload my music to iTunes, Spotify, and I'm supposed to get a certain amount of profit. I remember when I was a kid, and I got my first iPod Nano, and I started downloading music off of iTunes. It was 99 cents a song, then it was $1.25 a song, I think. It kind of went up with the same amount as soda went up, if you know what I mean. So if I take music off what they call sharing websites, which is a really friendly name for something that's otherwise illegal, on these websites, they take the songs, they upload it, and then that way anyone can download it for free. So what that does is that it takes away potential profit from the artist who released that song, because instead of them making a profit off you downloading it from iTunes, when you get it from one of these illegal pirating websites, you don't pay them any money. So that is another something else I want to keep in mind. And actually, let's look at a source right now that deals with the question. Now, the general what's the commonality between Wi-Fi and the commonality between downloading music? The commonality I want to bring to our attention is intangible/intellectual property. Does halacha, does Jewish law recognize ownership over an item that is not an item, that's not physical? And I'll tell you why that is a question, because when you look throughout Jewish law, through financial law, how do you acquire something in Jewish law? The most typical way you do it, you can lift it up, you can do hagvah, you lift up something, and that's how you acquire it. In order to perform all the different kinds of most kinyanim have to be done through some sort of physical action. So if you ever see when you go to the rabbi and he sells your chametz for you, and then he goes sells it to the non-Jew, so one of the things they do is the chalipin, they lift the pen, that's a form of acquisition as well. But if I can't touch something, if I can't create an initial acquisition on it, then am I really an owner? Can I really own a Wi-Fi signal? Can I own music? Or this goes for books as well. If I write a book and someone then downloads that book and then they print it themselves and they begin to sell it, does halakha have anything to say against it? Is there an intrinsic issue in halakha? So that's those are. I know I just spent some time laying out the framework, the questions. That is what we are exploring, okay? Before we jump into source number one, any clarification, just clarification questions? Okay, good. So source number one, this is a Gemara in Bava Kamma, and it's very popular in many modern Orthodox high school Gemara curriculums. So if you went to a modern Orthodox high school at, when you were a kid, maybe you learned this. Amar Leh, Hadar v'chatzar chavir shlomidato, tzarech alos lo schar o ein tzarech. If I am a squatter, if I go into someone, let's say, Reuven owns tons of property, he's a landlord, and Shimon, he needs a place to crash for the night, sleep for the night, so he sleeps inside that building, but he doesn't pay Reuven money. Does he have to pay Reuven for staying inside his building? So the Gemara says as follows, Hechi dami, ilim v'chatzir lo kaim la'agra v'gavzir lo avla migar, zelo nene v'zelo chatzir. So it can't be either extreme, okay? It can't be, if this is an apartment building that would be rented otherwise, and I'm preventing him, the landlord, from renting it out to someone, then I'm actually causing him a loss. So the question of the Gemara, there's an ellipses over there, but because it goes on for a while, the question of the Gemara is a category called Zenehene Vizelo Chaser, which means Shimon benefits from using the apartment, but Reuven does not benefit. So if Reuven has a warehouse somewhere, he's not renting it out for people to sleep in anyway, and then Shimon goes and sleeps in there. So what happens? Shimon benefited from Reuven's building, but Reuven did not lose anything from the fact that Shimon benefited from him. So the question is, when I only benefit but don't cause you a loss, do I still need to pay you money for it? That's the question in the Gemara. And the Gemara, one of the ideas mentioned in the Gemara in response to this is, V'chi ma'as alo ma'chesro. What did Shimon do to Reuven? What loss did he cause to him? If I don't cause someone a loss, I don't have to pay them. Why should I have to pay them? When I use something, maybe for some wear and tear, that comes up in the Gemara. But the psak is that we do not have to pay in a case of zen nene v'zelo chaser. And just a quick qualification. Tosafos in Bava Basra mentions, so the medieval rabbis commenting on this Talmudic idea, there's a principle of Kofen al Mida Sedom that we force people to be nice people. It's a topic for another time. And what they say is that this idea of me not having to pay someone for benefiting from them without causing them a loss is only bidi eved, is beshikvar dog bechatzer chavero. So lichadchila, right? So this is like a question. You go over to the rabbi, you ask the rabbi, can I cook my meat item in a dairy pot? So he'll tell you, no, you should not do that. But then you say, oh, rabbi, I wasn't asking you, should I do it? I was saying I accidentally did it. So then the rabbi says, oh, okay, well, you know, maybe if it was after 24 hours, it was a clean pot, it would be okay. So that's called bidyevet. That's ex post facto. That's after the fact. So after the fact, after I use someone's apartment, then I don't have to pay them for it. But I'm not allowed to initially use someone's property with the intention of not paying them for the service that they provided me. So I know that was a lot to take in, but after that, what does that mean for downloading music? So when I download music from a pirating website, would that qualify as zen nehene v'zelo chatzer? I benefit from the artist's music, but I do not cause them a direct loss. So I can see Toby already has something to say about this, right? Want to jump in on that?
Well, no, it's not the same thing. You do, I mean, The existence of the pirating website takes away from anybody whose music is put on that website.
Right.
Everyone has the right to earn based upon what they've created. And going back to the warehouse, I don't agree with that either. People have a right to be left alone. People have a right to have their stuff not messed with. No, you know, it's not just about rental. It's privacy It's whatever it is. If I don't want somebody using my thing, maybe it's not a nice thing, but it's mine. Right. It's mine. I have the right to not be molested in my possession of an item. So okay. I don't like that.
So, okay, right. So neither does Herschel Schechter. We're in good company over here. And so he actually...
I don't usually agree with him about things, but there you go.
Rabbi?
Yes.
Yeah, so Audrey.
Audrey.
Does that mean that all the homeless that are self-sheltering in the subway system or on the sidewalks have a perfect right to do it? They don't owe anybody anything. They can just be there.
Okay, so I think, you know, in particular for people who we see in the subways, there's a mental health aspect to it as well that needs to be addressed, that they might not be in the right state of mind when they're doing what they're doing. But
they know how to set up tents and they know how to take care of themselves and do what has to be done. I know somebody that works in the MTA system. That's why I'm mentioning it.
Okay, right.
Yeah.
I'm from New York, so I used to take the subway.
Right. Well, so am I. Yes, yes. And having a grandson who's a composer, I'm against anybody using his music and him not getting remunerated.
Right. So, okay, Audrey, you really... this is your topic today.
Right.
Okay. So good. I'm glad that you could bring in those personal anecdotes to inform the discussion. So let me just clarify one point. Again, lichatchila, meaning ab initio, if you ask, can I use someone's property without permission, even if it doesn't cause them a loss, you are not allowed to do it. Let's call it a iser beheter, right and wrong, moral, versus financial or monetary, do I owe money? From a moral standpoint, you are not allowed to take someone's property without their permission. There is a related sugya called kofin al midas sedom, which is if I have a lot of money and I could really help out some people, but I'm refraining from doing it, there are certain limited instances where the rabbinical court will say you can't just hoard all that money and hoard all those resources for yourself whilst everyone else is perishing. There is such an idea out there. But from a monetary standpoint, let's say, right? So Audrey, let's say someone downloads your grandson's music.
Yes.
So someone downloads your grandson's music. So if he were to come over to us and ask, can I do it? We would tell him, no, absolutely not. You can't do that. But the question is, let's say, you know, he already downloaded 100 songs or 1,000 songs from that pirating website. And then he happens to sit in on our shiur today and he hears, oh, wow, I'm not supposed to pirate music. Not that, you know, I think anyone coming to the shiur would not have thought of that beforehand. I don't think I'm enlightening anyone to this. But the question is, does he now have to go back and pay for all that music that he illegally downloaded? Does he have to now reach out? Like, think about it. Does he have to reach out now to all those artists, to your grants and say, by the way, you know, here's $500 for all those songs I download, however much it is. So that's really the question.
Hasn't that been in the courts recently with all of the, like you call it pirating or whatever it's called, where they have found that famous songwriters, or not even writers, but the performers have done that and have had to pay back?
Oh, okay. I'm not familiar. So, Audrey, it definitely sounds like you know a lot more of the facts on the ground about the music industry than I do. So I appreciate you making me aware of it. So I'll have to actually take a look at it. If you find out what these specific cases are, please email me, bring it to my attention. I'd love to see it.
Okay. Anyway,
so just back to Toby before also. So what do I mean that you agree with Rav Schechter? So Rav Schechter made an interesting point. He said, this is a loss because this person would otherwise be making money. And by you going on that illegal website, you are not providing them the profit that is due to that. The interesting thing that Rav Schechter says, I don't know how to practically make this work, but in theory, if you were not going to download something, but only because it is now made available and free, you are going to download it, he says that would not be a case of causing loss. The issue with that, just, and I think he would say this as well, he would concede this, is that on a practical level, it's hard to figure out. You have to be honest with yourself. You know, what would you not be downloading otherwise if it cost you money? That's like a really hard thing to quantify, to set parameters.
Right.
But I just throw that out there just to know it in theory, even if it doesn't have a lot to do in practice. Okay.
But
yeah.
But just one question. But I mean, it comes to, if everybody just refused to go on these pirating websites and give them the business, I mean, because somehow the pirating websites are benefiting, right? I mean, they're not doing it out of the goodness of their heart. There's got to be something they're getting at.
They run advertisements on the website. I think
okay.
That's
so if people weren't giving them the viewership or the whatever it is so that the advertisers would say, hey, this isn't worth my while, then a benefit could be achieved and these pirated websites would go away.
Yeah, that's certainly if our goals, that would be an approach. Yeah, I agree with you, Toby. I'm sure the FBI and others are working on it now, but I don't have a good solution. But we can make a connection here. Hopefully you could help them on their search. Okay, so here's the thing, though. Let's take a look at Ramosha Feinstein. So Ramosha Feinstein, as we know, was the preeminent authority of American Jewry, Ashkenazi Jewry, in America in the 20th century. So Ramosha Feinstein is not talking about iPods. He didn't live to see an iPod. But what he's talking about are tapes. So in my yeshiva in Darche growing up, they had a library called the Otzer HaSfarim. And in that library, there weren't only books, there were cassette tapes. So while the whole world was already moving into CDs and into early MP3 iPod devices, they have a whole tape collection of recordings of Torah classes, essentially the precursor to what we now have as YU Torah. So Rav Moshe Feinstein had to address a case where someone was taking these Torah classes, was duplicating, copying them over to other tapes, and then was distributing them without the original rabbi, the shiur giver, the class giver's consent. So what does Rav Moshe Feinstein say? Misha osa tape midivrei Torah, for osa latiko b'davar echa sha osa tape midivrei Torah, v'chose sha osa lasus mitape shalo o tapes. Let's say a rabbi, he has a tape and he explicitly says, I don't want you to make copies of this tape. So then, vadai osir, certainly you're not allowed to make copies of it. Ki inyan shava kesef, because what you're doing is you are preventing him from making profit. You're not literally stealing from him, but what you're taking is shava kesef, something that is equivalent to money. For those of us who were in the Sunday morning Chumash class, Bible from the beginning, we talked about that in the context of marriage, how giving a ring under the chuppah is called shava kesef. It's the equivalent of giving money. This man is trying to make a profit off of the money, off of the tapes. And so what you're doing over here is you're preventing it. And this isn't mishum midas sedom, by the way. Because again, I mentioned that in certain instances, the rabbis would force you not to be an Ebenezer Scrooge. They would force you to not hoard all of your wealth like a dragon on their pile of gold. But over here, this is not called leka mishum midas sedom. This is not called midas sedom. This is not called being wicked and being selfish like those from Sodom, from Sodom. Rather, he's just trying to make a simple living. He's a rabbi. He doesn't make that much money, especially if you're of a teacher variety. So this is just his way of making a little extra cash on the side. So therefore, lasos tape acher mi tape echa shalobra shusu iser gezel. What is the prohibition of infringement on copyright in Jewish law? Rav Moshe Feinstein says unequivocally, it is bona fide theft. It is an iser gezel without any qualification at all. That's Rav Moshe Feinstein's approach to it. Now, the thing is, though, again, I know to many of us, who are looking at this, especially from a secular legal standpoint, we think, of course, it's prohibited. But just keep in mind what I said at the beginning of the class, how it's unclear from Jewish law if there exists such a thing called intellectual and intangible property. Therefore, and what prompt, and now, so to try to explain Ramosha Feinstein, there's another response called Shol Meshiv, which addresses a question of infringement on copyright of books. He says as follows, and this is a fascinating line, by the way. Says v'lo yehi Torah shleima shalanu kesicha b'teila shalem v'zeh darsha seichu machisho. If all of the non-Jewish nations and countries and governments can come to the same conclusion that there is something called copyright, that if I create something new, I should have intellectual property rights to it. Certainly, even if I can't find a source in halachic literature for it, it just has to exist. Mitam svara, from a place of logic. Because our Torah should at least, it has to be better than the sicha b'teila, the empty words that these governments come up with. And I'll give you my reservations to this. Yeah, I get it. I get that the Torah, of course, has to be the moral light unto the world. But the thing is, there's a little bit of a, I don't know if slippery slope is even the right word. I think there's a fallacy here, because there's all sorts of things in the Torah that I think should be usur, or things in the Torah that I think should be permitted. And if I just say, if I look around today and the government says X is okay and Y is wrong, so certainly our Torah must be in agreement with it. So there's a little bit of a dangerous direction he goes in, though I will say, I only have a hesitation, but there is a difference. You see, like, let's say, I don't think, you know, Toby and other lawyers in the room, I don't think adultery is illegal anymore in the United States. Am I wrong on that?
Correct.
Right. So imagine you went ahead and said, I could do the same thing here. Imagine that, if a United States government could come to the conclusion that adultery is not illegal, certainly our Torah must be in agreement with that. So obviously that's not true. The difference there is that it says in the Torah that adultery is punishable by death. But over here, there just seems to be an absence. We don't see the Torah addressing the question of intellectual property, and that's what leads him to say that. But if the Torah explicitly takes a stance on an issue, you can't just say, if all the nations came to this conclusion, we also must come to this conclusion. Because that's just moral relativity, and then the Torah doesn't mean anything if it just has to conform to whatever we come up with in the 21st century. So that's it, something, that's my little bit of a hesitation, a reservation that I wanted to express on that source. But nonetheless, I think that's the motivation behind Rav Moshe Feinstein. I think when Rav Moshe Feinstein says that you're not allowed to infringe copyright because it is theft, he doesn't give a source for it. I think he's motivated by the same reasoning as the Shol Meshiv, that it's just gotta be us, or it's gotta be wrong. But let me try to argue the other side now. Why would it, maybe it wouldn't be prohibited to benefit from, and let's, you know, move away from books and go back to Wi-Fi, benefiting from not just intellectual, but even just intangible property. So here's a, you know, actually before Wi-Fi, here's a really great source. And this is a source that is used by many to support, before we go to the Kansai, let's back up. Another source to support Rav Moshe Feinstein's argument is somewhat of an agadata. It says as follows. The rabbis say that if a non-Jewish person studies our Torah, they are liable to death. It doesn't literally mean that the court will execute him. It's more of a hyperbole. Shenemar Torah tziva lanu Moshe marasha lanu marasha. So it's marasha lanu v'lo shelahem, v'lo lahem. It is our heritage and not the heritage of the other nations. Therefore, since the Torah is our heritage, therefore, only we are allowed to study it. Okay, but wait a minute. We just said non-Jews are not allowed to study Torah. So B'lakshmi gabe sheva mitzvos. So wait a minute. So in addition to the seven Noahide commandments, there's an eighth commandment now. There's an eighth commandment that says, do not study Torah. But why are there only seven commandments? Shouldn't this be an eighth commandment for non-Jews if in fact they're not allowed to study Torah? Good question, right? So the answer is, depends where we learn it out from. You see, if we understand that the issue is morasha, then we say migzalka gazola. So if we understand that the Torah is given to us as a heritage, why are non-Jews not allowed to learn it? Not because there's a separate prohibition against studying Torah, but because we, the Jews, own the Torah, and for someone else to go learn that Torah, they are stealing our Torah. And you know what's really fascinating about this, and this is why it informs our discussion, here we are with something that is intellectual property. The Torah is our intellectual property. We own it as a Jewish people. And here we do. Here we have a source that says if a non-Jew learns it, they are stealing. And in fact, you know, it's really fascinating because when a non-Jew learns Torah, does that mean there's any less Torah being learned by Jews in the world? Do you think for every non-Jew that joins Daf Yomi, another Kollel person all of a sudden, you know, dissipates into space? That's not how it works. But even though there is no loss to us, it's still considered theft for a non-Jew to be delving into Torah.
Wait a second. This is Talmudic source?
This is Talmudic. Talmud, Tractate, Sanhedrin 59.
And it's just sort of wild because don't we want more of the world to study Torah, learn Torah?
And don't we know priests who almost brag that they studied Torah and Judaism and talk about it?
Okay, Susan, Audrey, great points. Well, Audrey, just really quickly, you know, just because a priest does something doesn't mean Judaism thinks it's right. So I'll just say that. But to the point that you guys are really getting at is, wait, if the Torah is the word of God, shouldn't we want to disseminate that to the entire world? Don't we want to share the truth of God? So yes, so there, you know, this is a separate, I know I do this a lot, but it really is a separate cheer because I did put together a separate class on this that we could do another time. But just quickly, it doesn't mean they can't learn any Torah. Actually, some opinions say that Tanakh, learning the Jewish Bible, is not included in this. This is talking about Torah Sheval Peh. It's talking about studying the Talmud. So we could delve into this a little more later, but let's just not get off in too much of a tangent. The point that I want to extract from here is that we see that Torah is intellectual property. And for someone who does not own the Torah, they, by learning it, are stealing it. So that could work as a fantastic source also to back up Rav Moshe Feinstein and that school of thought that says that learning, taking someone's intellectual property without their permission is bona fide theft. So that's the end of building up that school of thought. I want to give the counter right now. Now we're up to that. And this actually is going to be very relevant. So for those of you who are studying Mishnah with us on a daily basis, this comes up in Mishnayos Rosh Hashanah. And of course, it's going to be relevant very soon for the high holidays. So look at the Rambam over here. So there's a general principle. Let me just tell you about before we look at the Rambam. There's something called a mitzvah haba ba'aver, which is generally if I perform a mitzvah, but in order to perform that mitzvah, I need to do a sin to perform that mitzvah, that's called a mitzvah haba avera, and in many instances, it invalidates the mitzvah itself. So, for instance, there's a whole perek in Sukkah, in the Talmud of Sukkah, called Lulav HaGuzzel, a stolen lulav. And in there, it has that whole discussion about if I steal a lulav, am I allowed to use it even on the other days of Yom Tov? Or is there an issue that if I steal a lulav, how could I perform a mitzvah with a stolen item? How could I perform a sin in order to perform a mitzvah? But here is a very fascinating exception to that rule. The Rambam says, shofar agazel shetaka bo yotza. Let's say you take a stolen shofar and you use that on Rosh Hashanah. It works.
Good way to start the year.
Right.
Good way to start the year.
Way to start the year. Yes, definitely. However, it actually works. She'ena mitzvah ela b'shmi'as hakol. The mitzvah of shofar is to hear the sound. And it's not about having so much. The item of the shofar is a means to getting to the sound that it produces. But it's not about the item of the shofar itself. And we say, even if you don't lift it up, you're still yotze. Why? So why is this all true? Why? I could say also, didn't I steal the sound that comes out of the shofar, the sound that it produces? The answer is, the ein b'kol din gezel. There is no law of theft when it comes to sound. So this is a really great source that the Maharam Shik in the next, in source 7, uses to say the following. Lefiza, lefi ma de kaimelon de ein gezel b'kol. Based on what we just said, that Rambam says that there's no such thing as stealing a sound. Why is that true? What makes sound different? Da'avi davar she'ein bo mamish, because it's intangible. It has no mamashus. Kishin damrian kol omar v'reich ein bo mishum me'ila. Same way we say that when it comes to sight, when it comes to smell, to scent.
Can't hear you.
Is there everything good?
I couldn't hear you.
I think it was just muffled for a second.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Let me rewind. Okay, let's
go back one sentence.
Am I good now?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay, so let's rewind a little bit. The Maharam Shik says, based on the Rambam, that something that what's the reason that there is no prohibition to, I mean, sorry, not a prohibition, that you're able to fill the mitzvah with a stolen shofar, because the mitzvah is the sound, and sound cannot be stolen. What's unique about sound? Sound is intangible. It's a darish ebo mamish. It has no physical quality to it. I mean, okay, obviously, I'm sure, yes, the sound waves do, but from a halakhic perspective, from what the eye can see, what the hand can hold, there is no physical quality to it. The same way we say if you benefit from the scent, or you benefit from looking at something that is consecrated to the temple, that's not called a desecration of using a consecrated item. Im kein kol shekein bezesha omer chidushi Torah, shetam chacham acher chidesh, if you are going to now say over and use the ideas that another scholar innovated, introduced, fu omer osam b'shem atzma, and then, you know, you decide to be a bit of a jerk and you say it was my idea, the lo chashiv gezel. At very least, it's not considered gezel. I know you're about to jump on me. The Maharam Shik, we're going to see the rest of the tshuva later where he says why it is usser. But as far as theft is concerned, you cannot have theft for an item that can't be stolen. Because in order to steal, there's something called a kinyan gezela. I pick up the item and I steal it by taking it from the owner's property, out of the owner's property. But if I can't physically acquire, I can't take hold of it, then if I can't obtain it, it can't be stolen, because stealing requires the removing of the item from the owner's property, out of the owner's property, away from the owner. So Ramchik says that it cannot be gezel based on what we just saw from the Rambam. And this has implications, again, for Wi-Fi, has implications for pirating music, that at least as far as theft is concerned, that can't be the source of the Isser, according to the school of thought that's represented by the Maharam Shik. Okay? Questions on that?
So would this also apply just to ideas? In other words, if you have an idea for something, but you haven't written it down, so nobody can, but you utter it. So that idea is out there in the public domain until it becomes, you know, a written thing where you could say somebody took my paper and ran with it.
So actually, you know, that is what the Maharam Shik is talking about, because I'm noticing as I read it, he's not talking so much about taking something that's written. He says someone is just, he said, Sha'omer chidushei Torah. You went to someone's class, right? So let's say you attended this class today, and I mean, you know, I have very few novel ideas in here. The sources are out there. I'm not the first one to present on this topic. But let's say I tell you something here innovative that you haven't heard anywhere else, that hasn't been said before. I doubt that happened. And then you go ahead and you say it over as your own idea. Then that's the problem he's discussing over here. So before copyright even. So, okay. Now there's a few, we're getting toward the end of our time. So let me just go through a few more sources. In the Tshuvos Beis Yitzchak, he suggests another idea. His idea is as follows. Ubavor avosenu harabim. By the way, if you ever read a tshuva and it uses that term, you know you're in for a treat. Bavor avosenu harabim, due to the in the multitude of our sins. There's always a good tshuva following whenever the person writing set prefaces by saying, due to the multitude of our sins, therefore, it means there's going to be a lot of fun in that tshuva. At least from my perspective, I'm trying to find good material for classes. That's where I always look. So, Bavor Masina Rabim Kayom Azeb, B'nei Tamei Chacham, Aniyah Merudim. There are these poor Tamini Chachamim, these poor guys are learning in Kolel, they're living off a Kolel stipend. Vahechrech Yelatz is Parnes Mizeh, and they need to make a profit. So, what do? They take people's Torah ideas, they publish them, they duplicate them, they copy them, and they make a profit off of it. Mikol Mako, Lehalacha, Lule Dina de Machusa, Lo Hayatzarach Nitol Rishus Misefer Hanitfas Kfar. Had it not been for a principle called Dina de Machuse Dina, it would not be usser to go ahead and copy that information. Now, what is Dina de Machuse Dina? Dina de Machuse Dina is this principle that the law of the land is the law. This is going to be probably one of our next classes, is delving into this idea, what the parameters are, but just the idea, al regel achas, on one foot, is that Jewish law says that as long as there's no conflict between Jewish law and what the state you're living in requires, you're supposed to adhere to the laws of the land. So had it not been for the fact that the country we live in has copyright laws, there would be no intrinsic prohibition against copyright. So this does two things. On the one hand, okay, great. Jews are obligated to follow the law of the land, so we're not allowed to make copyright infringements. That's a positive, right? But what he does also is he says that that's an extrinsic reason. Extrinsically, we are obligated to abide by those laws. But as far as intrinsically, from the Torah itself, there's no inherent mitzvah in the Torah that we can point to that talks about saying that we're not allowed to copy over someone's material and share it without their consent. So that is that's also an approach in the Beis Yitzchak, which is a middle approach. It's prohibited, albeit not because the Torah says so, but because the Torah says, listen to the state that you're living in. And then we're going to list a few more reasons why it would be prohibited to take someone's intangible property without their permission. Returning to that tshuva of the Maram Shik that we saw earlier, where he quoted this is who quoted the Rambam and said that there's no prohibition to steal. He writes, "Amnam Hagonev Chidushi Torah, the Hainish Omer Mishmo, someone who does take someone's novel Torah ideas and says it in his own name, Madachish Tamachachamacher, Ze Aser Mishum Midvar Sheker Tircha." Number one, you're lying because you're giving everyone the false impression that you're the one who originated the idea. Oh, mishum gneiva stas. Or also there's a prohibition, not just of lying, of deceit, but of also another prohibition of deceit, gneiva stas. Gneiva stas, the quintessential example is, let's say I'm throwing a party and I know that you can't make it to the party for whatever reason. Let's say you're out of state. I know you can't make it. And I would not have invited you had I known you could make it to the party. But now that you're you're not going to come anyway, I may as well get on your good side and send you an invitation. So that's called Geneva Stas. That's deceitful because you are literally stealing his knowledge by making him think that you genuinely wanted to invite him to the party. So here also, this is under the general rubric and prohibition of Geneva Stas, of deceiving others. And then finally, and I think this is perhaps the most compelling argument, comes from the Chassam Sofer. The Chassam Sofer says in his Tshuvos that, okay, maybe it doesn't fall strictly under stealing when I, you know, let's just use the modern day iteration of pirating music. Maybe I'm not stealing, but there's another prohibition called Hasogas Gvul, which literally means obtaining and moving boundaries. What does that mean halachically? What that means is, what's Hasogas Gvul? Mimasi Gvul? Hasogas Gvul is, let's say I own an apple stand and I make my full livelihood. I put all my strength. I get up at 5 in the morning, or I go to 6:30 Minyan first, and then I open up the stand, and then this is those apples, that's what I live off my entire life. And then, you know, Shimon comes and he opens up an apple stand right next to me, completely deprives me of my livelihood. I can't make ends meet anymore. And so what he's doing is he's taking away my profession. He's taking away my livelihood. This isn't healthy capitalism, by the way. You know, healthy capitalism is, you know, you'll have two businesses in the same city, both can survive, and it creates healthy competition. Here, I can't survive without it. So what's happening here? When you take my music, which I'm making a livelihood off of, and you put that up on the internet for free, I'm not making a livelihood anymore because I'm supposed to be making money off of those downloads. I put in my work. Instead of working 9 to 5 as an accountant, as a lawyer, whatever, I became a music artist. That's my career ambition. And here you go ahead and you take away my livelihood. It might not be strictly under the category called theft in Jewish law, but there's a very similar category called Hasagas Gvul, which is depriving someone of their livelihood. I saved this for last because I think this may be the most compelling, because I hear what the Maharamshik says based on the Rambam. I hear that in order to steal an halacha, it needs to be tangible. But what I could accept more easily, lefi anias daiti, in my humble opinion, is that it might not be bona fide theft, but at very least, you might be under the category in certain instances. If you take someone's book and you go ahead and you duplicate and sell, or you give it out for free, you're depriving them of a livelihood. So that would be a reason to prohibit pirating. But going back to Wi-Fi, by the way, it wouldn't be a reason to prohibit using someone's Wi-Fi. You would still need to either bring in the reason of assuming that intangible property is property in Jewish law, or if there, I don't know, lawyers in the room, tell me, is there a law yet out there saying that you're not allowed to use someone's Wi-Fi without their permission? Does that exist?
I don't know.
Okay. So
I don't know.
If and when that will exist, or does already exist, and I'm just not aware of it, then at very least, Dina de Mahuse Dina, we are obligated to follow the laws of the land. The law of the land is the law. So what we're going to do, God willing, next time is actually explore that concept in more details and show how, you know, Dina Mahuse Dina, again, it's one of those concepts. In our last year, we talked about how everyone just flippantly uses the term pikuach nefesh in order to substantiate whatever argument they want to make. So Dina Mahuse Dina is a similar idea too. If I just invoke Dina Mahuse Dina, one of my rebbeim, he once made the joke, we should basically put perforations in our Shulchan Aruchs. If you think Dina Mahuse Dina means that whatever the law of land is, that's what we have to do. So when it doesn't correspond with the Shulchan Aruch, you just take out a page, God forbid. So obviously there are certain limitations on its application. God willing, we'll address that next time. Are there any questions that I can address before we log off for tonight?
Yeah, so you're going to post this on the shul website, are you?
So I'm still figuring out how to get on the shul website. So this goes on a website called YU Torah.
YU Torah, okay.
And the only way to access it via the website now is that when you go to my bio on the website, there's a link to my YU Torah account.
Mm-hmm.
But if you think people will benefit from it, I could try to find a better way to publicize it.
No, I was just wondering. So it's posted somewhere, that's all.
Yes, God willing, this will be posted somewhere within the next 5 minutes after we log off.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you.
Any other questions?
No, okay. That's good.
A lot to absorb.
Okay. And if there any questions come up after we log off, feel free to email me, call me. Happy to schmooze more. And God willing, looking to seeing you all next week at our next installment of the Shear series.
Okay. Thank you.
But first tomorrow at noon.
Oh, it'll be a different Shear. Yes. But tomorrow at noon, Audrey. I look forward to seeing you at the partial class.
Right.
All right. Have a good evening.
Thank you.
Thank you, Rabbi.
Thank you for joining.